You're listening to Clinical Conversations, a Journal Watch podcast formerly known as Admitting Diagnosis, for the week of April 3rd. I'm Joe Elia. Call us at 1-617-440-4374 with your reactions. This should not be a one-way clinical conversation. We'll take a quick look at the week's news and then launch into an interview. This week we talk with Dr. Don Grisdale of the University of British Columbia about a meta-analysis on tight glucose control. The news first. Two articles this week point to a serious shortcoming in the U.S. health system, the failure of communication between hospitalizations. The first study from the New England Journal of Medicine looked at Medicare data and found high rates of unplanned readmissions. Two-thirds of the patients admitted once had been readmitted or died within a year. More surprisingly, half of those rehospitalized within 30 days had no evidence of having seen a clinician after their first discharge. The second article, from the Journal of General Internal Medicine, found that in some 200 patients who were discharged and readmitted to a teaching hospital within 14 days, only about half the time did the discharging team know that the patient was back in the hospital, and actual communication between teams was even less frequent, about 40%. Alan Brett, writing in Journal Watch General Medicine, writes that creating systems to ensure communication between discharging physicians and readmitting physicians simply makes good sense. Next, news from the American College of Cardiology meeting. You could be forgiven for thinking that cardiology had taken over medical news this week. The American College of Cardiology's annual scientific sessions took place in Orlando. I'll place a complete list of the news we covered in Journal Watch and Physicians First Watch on the website. That's podcasts.jwatch.org. There was data from the Jupiter trial, the announcement of a new drug, Relaxin, for heart failure, a study showing that ventricular reconstruction during coronary artery bypass isn't effective, a phase 2 study of polypills to address all your cardiovascular risk factors, and more. Now, on to the interview. Last week saw a lot of activity around the question, how valuable is tight glucose control during intensive care? First of all, the New England Journal of Medicine published the results of the NICE sugar trial, in which 6,000 critically ill patients were randomized to either tight control, which was glucose kept between 80 and 110 milligrams per deciliter, or to conventional control, which was between 140 and 180. There were more deaths by the 90-day mark in the tight control group. Then, another group incorporated the NICE sugar results into its meta-analysis, published in CMAJ. They found a survival benefit among surgical ICU patients on tight control. They asked that the American Diabetes Association and the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists reconsider their recommendations for tight control in all critically ill patients. We have invited Dr. Donald Grisdale from the Department of Anesthesia in the Program of Critical Care Medicine at Vancouver General Hospital and the University of British Columbia to give us his perspective. He's the first author on that meta-analysis. Welcome, Dr. Grisdale.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
Well, this whole thing seemed to have started way back in November 2001 when Greet Vandenberg published his findings in the New England Journal of Medicine. And from all the recent activity, it sounds like this question is going to remain open for a while.
Yeah, it's interesting. Dr. Vandenberg, she really revolutionized critical care with her initial publication, which really showed a mortality benefit to surgical patients with intensive insulin therapy targeting a blood glucose of 80 to 110. Unfortunately, subsequent papers have really failed to demonstrate this ongoing mortality benefit. And this is sort of what the impetus was for the large NICE sugar study and also why we decided to do the meta-analysis. But it certainly sounds like right now there's still some uncertainty regarding intensive insulin therapy in this patient population.
So before her studies, and I called her a him in my introduction, but I'm sorry, before her studies, was there any hint that glucose control was important in critically ill patients?
Yeah, that's a good question. Certainly, there was fairly reasonable evidence that hyperglycemia was deleterious and was associated with both mortality and also morbidity. And certainly people try to avoid significant hyperglycemia. But there wasn't this real push to normalize blood glucose with what's now termed intensive insulin therapy. So although people tried to avoid hyperglycemia, they really didn't target aggressively normalized blood glucose in the critically ill. It was really Dr. Vandenberg who pioneered this modality.
All right. And after the nice sugar data were released last week in the New England Journal, the Diabetes Association and the clinical endocrinologists issued a joint statement saying, you know, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. We still think this stuff is important, so don't become complacent. Has the critical care community been heard from in this regard?
Well, that's a very difficult question to answer. Certainly, I think intensive insulin therapy as a whole was viewed in different parts of the world with different levels of certainty. Certainly up here at our institution, we never really adapted to intensive insulin therapy. Rather, we tried to control blood glucoses to less than 180 milligrams per deciliter. So we had a much more conservative approach, concerned with the risk of hypoglycemia. We were also concerned the fact that Dr. Vandenberg's initial study was single center, and she had some unusual practices in terms of feeding regimens for her patients. So because of that, we didn't really adapt intensive insulin therapy here. I think various institutions and intensive care units have had various degrees of intensive insulin therapy. So it's a little unclear how much this is. The nice sugar data itself is going to really change practice. I suspect those units which have had more conservative blood glucose control targeting less than 180 will probably keep doing that. I suspect that some intensive care units that still do intensive insulin therapy will have to reevaluate their practices now with a new nice sugar study coming out, depending on the type of intensive care unit that they're at.
So the critical care organizations have not weighed in as organizations on this yet?
I haven't seen anything yet.
Huh. And the difference in effect, one of the things that your meta-analysis found, Don, was that people in surgical ICUs seem to have a benefit, and people in medical surgical ICUs and people in medical ICUs did not have this benefit. And
correct.
Of all people, Greet Vandenberg wrote an editorial about your meta-analysis in CMAJ, which was a nice sort of closing of at least one circle. And she argues that the way that they measure glucose and the way that they feed people in surgical ICUs may be the thing that makes the difference here. Do you buy that argument?
Well, maybe I'll step back and comment first on the surgical ICU subgroup that we found.
Mm-hmm.
You know, overall, we didn't find an effect when we look at all the types of ICUs, whether it be mixed, medical, or surgical. We decided ahead of time, because this question has come up time and time again, about maybe it depends on the type of patients. So we did a priori look at the different types of ICUs and divided them into medical, mixed, and surgical ICUs. So the surgical ICU group is a fairly small subgroup, and any time you look at subgroups in medicine and in statistics, you have to be careful with looking at subgroups because they may represent smaller numbers, and therefore they may be subject to more sampling variability. So I think one of the issues when you deal with small numbers is that they may tend to be more biased. The other thing that you have to think about with a surgical ICU is that, well, a mixed ICU has both surgical patients and medical patients as well. And, you know, I think the bigger question is, well, maybe if we looked at those surgical patients admitted in the mixed studies, maybe if we were able to examine those, we'd get a much better estimate of the effect of surgical patients. So is it a surgical ICU itself, or is it the fact of surgical patients admitted to the medical ICU, or sorry, to the mixed ICUs? And I don't think we're able to answer that now. What I think would be very beneficial is to do what's called an individual patient meta-analysis, where you take all the patients based on their individual characteristics. So, for instance, you can look at the surgical patients that were admitted to the mixed units and to pull all of those results to see if those specific subgroups of patients, in fact, benefit.
I see.
So although the surgical ICU study, the surgical ICU subgroup may, in fact, be a true finding, I think you have to interpret it with a lot of caution because of the small numbers involved.
I see. And so the argument that she makes that it may have to do with the environment, you're willing to entertain it, but there's not enough data to convince you yet.
Yeah, you know, it's certainly possible. You know, unfortunately, the only study that's really hers is really the one study that's consistently shown this benefit. You know, there's some smaller studies that have shown a benefit as well. But so it might be something that she's able to do that other studies have been unable to replicate. And that sort of calls into question the generalizability, meaning just because she can do it, does it benefit patients throughout the world and other studies that have not been able to show that?
So as a result of the new data that were released, and as a result of your work, your meta-analysis, are you making any changes in your program as a result of this?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. We never really adopted intensive insulin therapy targeting the 80 to 110 range because of the concerns of the hypoglycemia. Not only that, in order to achieve those goals, it's a significant nursing workload issue. In terms of both nursing time and also costs associated with that. So we never really adopted it at our institution, and we actually have always practiced the conventional arm in the NICE sugar study, meaning we've already always targeted less than 180 milligrams per deciliter. So, in fact, it hasn't changed our practice, although I suspect if NICE sugar had been a positive study and perhaps if the meta had been positive, we may have decided to adopt intensive insulin therapy. But no, it's not actually going to change what we do, although I suspect that some units that do practice intensive insulin therapy may need to change their practices or at least revisit what they're going to do now with this new data.
Because the reason to revisit those practices is that there's increased mortality as you get tighter and tighter control. Is that really due to the greater incidence of hypoglycemia, or is it... What could account for that higher mortality?
Yeah, that's the fascinating question in all of this, is what is it about targeting really tight blood glucose levels that actually increases the mortality? And speaking with the NICE sugar investigators, it's unclear. Is it the hypoglycemia itself, or is there something else? And they're really unclear at this point. I suspect they're going to do a lot of secondary analysis of the data to try to tease out what that is, because, you know, even if you look at some of the other studies, like Greet Vandenberg's study, for instance, she did have an increased risk of hypoglycemia, but yet intensive insulin therapy was associated with improved survival. So it's unclear whether or not it's the hypoglycemia that's driving the mortality in NICE sugar or if it's something else. So that'll be very interesting to find out.
Have you got, are there any other studies that are underway now that you're waiting to analyze?
No, I don't know. I'm sure the NICE sugar people have a lot of studies that they're planning to do with this data. They've got a very rich database, but I don't know at this point what they're planning to do with the data.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Grisdale, for your time today. This is a complex issue.
Yes, it is. I hope I wasn't too confusing to the issue, but no, it was a great opportunity. Thank you very much.
Finally, we're all ears here at 1-617-440-4374. So give us a ring. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Adoriano. And I'm Joe Elia. Enough said. See you next week.